One Man Revolution, episode 41. Hey, everybody. This is The Revolutionary, and you're listening to One Man Revolution. Man, today, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm just looking at all these wonderful headlines, and holy cat, I could talk about so many different things, you know. Tom DeLay talking about, you know, as much violence happening in Houston, Texas, as there is and are in the streets of Iraq, or Halliburton getting a new contract for the Balkans, even though they're under investigation by the government accounting office, or even fun things like, you know, boondoggling within contracting, or propaganda in Afghanistan, or the Washington Post being oblivious to Social Security. You know, of all those things, there was one headline that caught me, that made me very, very happy to see, and that was this one here. A headline in the Washington Post yesterday declares, Bush defends strategy in Iraq, pledges to complete mission. Problem is, and I found information on all of these, and I'm pulling the audio, the trouble is that Bush has changed the definition of mission so many times, it's hard to have any confidence in this recent declaration. So, what has happened since way back in March of 2003? Well, it all started with Bush stating, well, why should I state what Bush stated? Let me go ahead and take it right from the horse's mouth.
And that creates a certain sense of anxiety. I understand that. Nobody likes war. The only thing I can do is assure the loved ones of those who wear a uniform that if we have to go to war, if war is upon us because Saddam Hussein has made that choice, we will have the best equipment available for our troops, the best plan available for victory, and we will respect innocent life in Iraq. The risk of doing nothing, the risk of hoping that Saddam Hussein changes his mind and becomes a gentle soul, the risk that somehow that inaction will make the world safer is a risk I'm not willing to take for the American people.
Yeah, he sure as heck wasn't willing to take any risk there, was he? So before the war, his mission was really clear. He wanted to go in, and because it was Saddam Hussein's choice not to disarm, although we see a little bit later that, well, he didn't have any weapons of mass destruction as far as we could tell. Would they find three vials of some type of an agent in the backseat of a car in a briefcase? And really, they haven't found the stockpiles. Of course, they're going to say, well, just because we haven't found any doesn't mean there isn't any here. You know, maybe it was shipped to Syria or Jordan or some other country here in the area. But the problem is that what Bush was saying, what good old King George was saying, is that our mission is clear. We are going to disarm Saddam Hussein. So after the war began, the mission expanded. And basically, on the 22nd, of course, after we began the war, our mission would be yet clear yet again. and it is to disarm Iraq of the weapons of mass destruction, to end Saddam Hussein's support for terrorism, and to free the Iraqi people. That's a little bit more expanded, isn't it? I mean, the first one is we got to go in and just make sure that this madman in Persia doesn't start throwing nukes at us, or biologics, or just about anything else, which time has shown he didn't have, and that the Downing Street memos has also shown that we didn't even have the intelligence of pretty much anything to say that he did. So basically, that was the one thing that, you know, that basically expanded there, isn't it? So a little bit later on the 14th of April of 2003, another clear mission was made, and Bush was real favorable on the word clear. You know, the clear mission. Our mission is very clear. Our mission is clear to disarm Iraq. I guess we had the same guy writing that speech each time, and he had this clear idea of exactly what had to happen. Our mission is clear to end a regime that threatened its neighbors and the world with weapons of mass destruction and to free the people that have suffered far too long. Same thing. And I would pull the audio on that one. It's just that I was having trouble finding him saying these exact words because I'm using White House sources. And for some reason, most of them cut off just before you can find the quote itself. Even though it's in the text, they no longer have the audio played that far. Go figure. All right. So basically, by the time May 3rd, 2003, came around, the famous speech of King George standing on, you know, the USS Abraham Lincoln. He said, you know, I delivered good news to the men and women who fought in the cause of freedom. Their mission is complete and major combat operations in Iraq have ended. So that was May 3rd. Last time I checked, it was June of 2005. All right, so I guess all of the death and everything else is part of the minor combat operations in Iraq, or the peacekeeping, to which more people have died after this statement. But then again, okay, so, but then, you know, a little bit later on in that year, in July, the 30th of 2003, Bush stated that the United States and all our allies will complete our mission in Iraq. Well, didn't he say 2 months before that, more than 2 months before that, that the mission was complete, that the American fighting men and women were complete and out of it? What do you think? He could go back to the United Nations and have them bail him out? I mean, you know, hey, you know, guys, we deposed a leader of a sovereign nation, and we sort of went against, completely against world opinion. And we sort of, you know, did the big bully thing where we bowed up and stood in front of the bad guy and punched him in the nose. And then, you know, well, we didn't just punch him in the nose. We punched him in the nose, dumped him in a spider hole, and fouled him later. But that's okay. So it was interesting to see that we started out going to Iraq just for disarming this Persian madman. And I like using that one because people long forget that the map was drawn much differently prior to the occupation of the British back in the earlier part of last century, that the British basically carved out Iraq and Iran. But that's okay. We can not look at history and look forward. But we somehow continued this mission again and again and again and again. And here in November of 2003, Bush makes the statement, "That has been our mission all along, to develop the conditions such as a free Iraq will emerge, run by Iraqi citizens." All right, so if that was their mission all along, well, why was the mission so clear back in March of the same year that the mission was disarmament, or the mission was to disarm these, you know, to end Saddam Hussein, you know, and that problem? Well, political opinion changed. You know, he started catching a hell of a lot of heat. And so by the time, you know, 2004 rolls around, and a year after he made the idea that the mission was complete and combat operations were over, Bush, King George says yet again, we see that Iraq is a free, self-governing, and democratic. We will accomplish our mission. We will see that Iraq is free and self-governing and democratic. We will accomplish our mission. Well, according to you, Kingy, the mission was complete a year before when we, when we were completely out of combat operations. Well, then just this year, just earlier this month, 20 days ago, actually, King George said, and our mission is clear. Again, I guess he got the old speechwriter back from 2 years ago, or 3 years ago now. 2 years ago? Yeah, 2 years ago. And our mission is clear there as well, and that it is to train the Iraqis so that they can do the fighting, making sure that they can stand up and defend their freedoms, which they want to. Well, I guess they would want to defend their freedom if they had it. It seems like we're calling all the shots and telling them when and if they're going to be free. So now, just on the 20th, and that was on Monday for everybody here, King George says we're making progress toward the goal, which is, on the one hand, a political process moving forward in Iraq, and on the other hand, the Iraqis capable of defending themselves. And we will complete this mission for the sake of world peace. You know, I started looking into all of these quotes, and a lot of the information that's there really, you know, kind of just pulls your mind away from what the, what's really going on around here. You know, like I said, we have all of these other issues going on, but, well, guess what? We have no real... You know, we have no real checkup on any of this stuff. So a lot of the conclusions that I've been, you know, basically been looking into are calls about Halliburton, information about some of their contracts that are going through. And to look at some of the information that's out there about Halliburton, it makes me sick. It just makes me sick to see that there's information out there that says that Halliburton sort of lost, you know, $1.8 billion in cash that was sent to Iraq. And I'm sitting here going, now wait a minute here. How is it possible to lose $1.8 billion? You know, maybe my number's off. I'll have to make sure I check on that. But, you know, it's amazing how many of these places... All of this information, you know, all of this information is out there. And when you look at all this information, it's like, holy crap. You know, there's these non-bid contracts for Halliburton, and there's these, and they're in the ridiculous numbers, too. $7 billion, $1.8 billion. Investigating allegations from the Army Corps of Engineers that basically the Army gave this $7 billion contract to Halliburton in March of 2003. You know, that was right after the war had started and was still hot. You know, they wanted to put those fires out. You know, so they called Halliburton. Now, I don't know, you know, what you're going to say about that. You know, Halliburton was the exact company that Vice President Cheney worked for and still receives compensation from. And according to some sources, his compensation is from, of course, deferred from when he was actually chairman and CEO. But to a lot of us out here in the world, it looks like payola for all of these contracts and whatnot, because he's in a really good position to bury stuff in committees since he is president of the Senate. He's in a really good position since the Republicans control both the Senate and the House that they could bury all this information. The Department of Defense is investigating Halliburton's billing system, which it calls inadequate. Pentagon accountants said that it's uncertain as to why Halliburton's KBR unit billed the government $1.8 billion in work that apparently was never undertaken or completed. I mean, that blows my mind. If it were you or I, and we had something, we would all be in prison right now. I mean, $1.8 billion. Do you realize how much that is? That's 1,800 million dollars. I mean, that's ridiculous. That is just insane. I don't know how. Those are numbers that are so large that sometimes I can't even understand them. You know, I was talking this over with a very good friend of mine. We'll just call him Revolutionary Miller. And Revolutionary Miller and I were sitting here, and we were talking, and he said, "Oh, that's real simple. You know, it's an accounting mistake." And I said, "Well," and he smiled. And I said, "Well, that's a pretty decent accounting mistake. I wish I could make accounting mistakes like that too. You know, especially when that $1.8 billion represents 43% of my expenditures in a certain place. You know, that's almost half my expenditures that would be almost half my expenditures in a certain country if I were Halliburton. You know, but hey, what are you going to do? You know, that's yet another couple of dollars." So, you know, it's really starting to, to make me very nervous about our current administration. And it should make you nervous too. You know, I don't understand how this is working. You know, it's amazing. Overcharges of $167 million. Just investigation after investigation, you know, FBI, Securities and Exchange Commission, French government, Nigeria, you know, we got all these different, and the sums are ridiculous. $180 million there, $5 million here, $2.4 million over there, $7 billion on a no-bid contract from the United States government, $167 million in overcharges when competitors were, you know, basically, you know, they were charging double for the cost of gasoline. They were charging, you know, ridiculous amounts of money. And then I did a little more investigating, and I found out that they run a lot of their money through the Canary Islands. They run a lot of their money through offshore accounts. You know, about 70% of their company is run offshore. So they're not even paying taxes in the United States for these global operations with Halliburton. You know, there were people that were injured in several, you know, several civilians were injured here in the, you know, basically there in Iraq, who went over there to get really nice jobs. You know, because we do have, you know, an employment problem. You know, a lot of our people here are underemployed, or they see this, you know, you can make $85,000, $100,000 for the job you're currently doing now. If you would just do it in Iraq, and it's perfectly safe, you'll be working within a military base, or you'll be working, you know, driving in a convoy surrounded by military personnel. So how could you get injured? Well, a suicide bomber pulled into a camp and blew it up and injured many people and killed a whole lot more. And some of those people are Halliburton employees, but, you know, from KBR or some of the other companies at work that are under the umbrella of Halliburton. And guess what? They refuse to pay any claims. Actually, we find that about 50% of the claims are they just refuse to pay. And another 50%, they just another 30%, they sit around and say basically that they're challenging them. You know, so they just flat out refuse to pay a certain amount. They challenge the rest of them, and then basically they tie it up with attorneys, and no one gets anything. And they also use the fact that the people are out of the country as leverage too. They say, guess what? You know, if you go back before that 330th day, you don't get the benefit of no taxation on your money. You're going to have to pay taxes on the money you made here. So, yeah, I'm sorry that your ears are ringing and you got a limp and, you know, you're not really getting any medical care for any of that stuff. But, you know, if you go back now, you're going to have to pay taxes on that $80,000. And, you know, it really wouldn't even have been worthwhile for you to come over here. So people are reluctant to report injuries because they know they'll get sent home. They're reluctant to say anything against it. It's like indentured servitude. You know, these people, of course, you know, if you ask the company, they're going to say, well, these people have a choice. Well, if you're a guy who's making, you know, $10 an hour as a forklift driver, and you tell him he can make $85,000 by working in Iraq for a year, and all he's thinking is that he can take that $85,000 tax-free and bring it home and buy his family a home, you know, buy his family nice things and buy his family other, other niceties of American life and the American lifestyle. You're basically not going to get that guy to leave his job unless he's dead. Unless he's injured to the point where he can't work anymore. Then you're going to send him back home and he's not going to be able to get disability because, well, he was working at a foreign company. And you don't get disability from a state if you're working in a foreign country. So a lot of this stuff really rings true to me that says that a lot of these people are just, you know, getting completely screwed over because of these rich companies are playing on the greed of the low and lower middle class, on the working class, the class that's very important to the operation of this country. You know, myself, I'm not above mowing my own lawn, repairing my own ceiling, painting my own house, and doing other things. You know, I'm not above that. But that's also because, you know, sometimes I get goaded into it by my family. They goaded me into redoing my ceilings, people. You know, I got general contractors in the family. And they're like, come on, it's not that hard. You know you can do it. You've done sheetrock before. You've done plaster before. You've done all this stuff before. Why not do it again? What, are you above doing manual labor, Dan? Are you above doing this? Are you above doing that? You know, I thought you were this big revolutionary, this man of the people. Yeah, I know. Well, I would have paid somebody to do it, but they're right. Why should I pay someone to do something I can do, especially when I have the time? You know, right now I have plenty of time, and that might change very soon. I've got a lot of projects coming up that I'm working on. But the real problem with this whole situation is there are people that they have to work that 16-hour day. They have to work that second job. They have to work. They have to work and work and work to stay at a level, you know, to keep themselves from going under. You know, and those are those working class, what we call the working poor in this country. You know, on paper they might look like they make money, but really they don't have a life. They have an existence. So companies like Halliburton, companies like Halliburton and all the umbrella companies with them, and there are so many company names they go by, it's ridiculous. You know, it's just amazing how many different, you know, security forces and other things they use the name of in order, you know, KBR and other information. You know, but hey, what are you going to do? They're a really big multinational company, and you know people are going to say, well, they're just doing business, you know. So what if they're not doing the moral thing? The moral thing isn't necessarily how you run a business. So I'm just going to leave you guys with that question today. And send me your answers. Send your answers to One Man Revolution. I didn't mean to bring everybody down. Jeez, I got to do these things earlier in the day. I think Wanda Wisdom said it best, that when you tend to get a little reflective when you do your podcasts in the evening. And I got to agree with that wonderful drag queen. You go, girl. You know, she's absolutely right. You do get reflective and introspective at the end of the day. And when I start looking at all this information, I looked at it earlier in the day. I was working on a project, and so I had to put this off to later on in the evening. And she's absolutely right. You get so introspective that you take some of the fun out of it. And we do this because it's fun. I look into this stuff because it's amazingly interesting how much crap people can get away with. Man, I would love to be on the receiving end of a $2.4 million bribe or a $5 million bribe. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, it's like hitting the lottery just by someone, you know, some company wanting to do business with you. It's amazing. All right, so this is me, the revolutionary at One Man Revolution. And I am going to tell you to stay tuned for more interesting intrigue and conspiracy about this current administration. Remember, these people are the enemies of all of us, and King George's tyranny shall not stand. Okay? So, this is the one man from One Man Revolution. And remember, to contact One Man Revolution, you can email onemanrevolution@gmail.com or on Skype at The Revolutionary. That's THE_REVOLUTIONARY. Or just visit the website at http://onemanrevolution.org. So don't forget to tune in on Thursday for episode 42, or Friday for episode 43, and I may just do one on Saturday for episode 44. So until then, this is The Revolutionary. See ya!